Welcome to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio, bringing you insights and strategies to help you create a magnificent and fulfilling second half of life. Here's your host, certified professional retirement coach and best-selling author, Dr. Dorian Mincer.
I want to welcome everybody to my fourth Tuesday Revolutionize Your Retirement Interview with Expert series. I'm Dori Mincer, owner of Revolutionize Your Retirement and your host for this series. I think you're going to be very happy you're here because we're going to be talking with Jan Cullinane, who is a psychologist and a terrific person who I've interviewed before. And I actually had the opportunity to read the book ahead of time and make a comment about it because I think it's a really terrific book. And Jan's going to tell us all about it. She's a recognized expert on a holistic retirement. Her books include two previous editions of this best-selling, The New Retirement, The Ultimate Guide to the Rest of Your Life, and the award-winning The Single Woman's Guide to Retirement, and also Retire Happy. She's a healthy living columnist for Ideal Living magazine and a contributor to Everybody Has a Book Inside of Them, which came out in 2019, and The Weekend Book Proposal, which was 2014. She's given numerous presentations about retirement. Clients have included AARP, Smithsonian, In and Out Burger, Wells Fargo Advisors, Ford Motor Company, and Deloitte, Ameriprise Financial, and the federal government. She's frequently interviewed for print and online media and has appeared on national, local TV and radio shows. Her educational credentials include a BS and a master's in education from the University of Maryland, and she's ABD, or all but dissertation, from Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey. She lives in Palm Coast, Florida, with her husband, Roger, and has three married children, five grandchildren, who she says are all downstairs as we speak, and sincerely believes these years are the best years, if you're prepared. And she can speak backwards fluently. We'll have to learn about that. So anyway, Jan, I am so delighted that you're here and that you have your full voice with you today. We have been scheduled earlier, and Jan at the last minute had laryngitis. Her book, I really do recommend her book, and I actually, as I reviewed it ahead of time, wrote, it's just one of these books that has up-to-date research, assessments, incredible resources, stories, and she covers everything. So it's really one of these must-read books for retirement planning. Welcome, Jan. And what about this backwards, talking backwards?
Yes, it is bizarre. If I take a sentence like, say, I am happy to be here, I would say it all backwards, but in the same order. I is I, am is ma, happy would be yipa, to would be ot, b would be eb, and here would be era, E-R-E-A. So I don't know how it came about. From the time I was a kid, I was able to just visualize the words and say them backwards. I will throw in that I did try out for David Letterman's Stupid Human Tricks, but I will also tell you, it sounds like gobbledygook. So needless to say, I did not advance, but it was fun doing it. One person who did advance, these were preliminary ones, this woman could play the violin beautifully, but she would sit on the floor and she could wrap her legs around her neck while doing it. So hers was much more visual than mine. Another person who could pull out his uvula, the little thing that hangs down in the back of your mouth, and pull it out of his mouth. Oh, mine was really a non-starter, but it was a fun thing. And I like to just point out that at least I got to try out.
But I think that's pretty exciting. Speaking of the visual thing, let me just let people know who are listening, this is not a video. It's an audio event, and I know sometimes people are disappointed in that, but often people also tell me that they're just inundated with so much Zoom, so it's a welcome change to have audio. So you're not supposed to be able to see us on the screen. That was one of the first questions that I got.
Just imagine. So, we're all
right, just imagine us there. Tell us, what led you to decide to write this third edition of this chock-full book?
I just have a passion for doing it, I have to say. I love looking at things holistically, and there really isn't too much out there that kind of dwells on all of the aspects of retirement. And I will say I am not a certified financial planner. I am not a CPA, but I know a lot of them. So that section is the section that I thank people for contributing that as well. But I have relocated a number of times. My background is health, and so I'm very interested in that. Aging along with the rest of us, so I was interested in that. So I just all the aspects of it and feel I had a good background in it and love doing it. And so put it all together, and I thought, I think I can do it one more time. I think this will probably be the last book, but I enjoy the process. Had a great publisher, had a great agent, and it all just came together.
That's great, and I think we're all blessed having it, because I must say, looking through it, it's got wonderful resources in it, although I must comment that you don't have the resource of a book I co-authored, which maybe in an addendum you can add.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. I just noticed that, but anyway, that's all right. But the resources are really very up to date, and in each chapter where she does cover, it's a wonderful holistic book. I'm just going to give a plug for how you have it structured, that each chapter has a lot of amazing information, but then there's very up-to-date resources, often little questionnaires, statistics. So it really is holistic and comprehensive. Just wanted to point that out. So tell us, I know 10,000 people are turning 65 every day, and I think you say in the book that by 2030, all the boomers will be at least 65.
That's right.
Can you talk a little about that? I know we've been hearing it for a while, but it hadn't registered to me about the end date of all boomers being 65 by 2030. It's interesting.
It is. It's just an amazing statistic when you think about that, that 10,000 people are turning 65 every day. And that was another reason, with the number of boomers turning that age, getting older, it just seemed the time was right for that. It's such a huge group, like the pig and the python they talk about coming down through the snake, that it's just this giant number of people. And obviously we can't put everybody into the same group in terms of likes, dislikes, or whatever. So number one, there's always a sort of unending audience for your book when you have a group that huge, which is a wonderful thing to have. And then the second thing is that something I wrote, say, back in 2007 and 2009, 2012, things just changed so much, it just seemed to needed to be freshened up a little.
So how do you feel about the term retire and retirement?
Yeah, I know people say it's a bad word and not to use the word retire. And then you always hear people say, what are you retiring to and not from? And that's important. But I don't know, words somehow, they, to me, it's more about the actions than the words. And I don't like the word retire because it indicates a withdrawal from, but I don't get too hung up on that. I just more like to think about, what are we going to do? If we're going to call it retirement, it's just a word everyone kind of understands what we're talking about, having left your primary career. So let's just move on from that and talk about what's it mean rather than dwell
right
on the word.
I think that's a good way to look at it. So for you, what does it mean?
For me, retirement really means new opportunities. What are we going to be doing with this next part of our life? And it could mean going back, obviously, to work. It could be pursuing these passions. It could mean I love to read. It's an opportunity for me to try to catch up on all the books that I hadn't when I was working. I taught anatomy and physiology and microbiology and health psychology at a college. So I didn't have a lot of time to read just for pure pleasure. I tended to read more for improving what I was teaching. And for me, it's an opportunity to do all those kinds of things. And I tend to live in a community where we're all aging in place. And I'd say for others, it is too. And it's an opportunity to try new things. I didn't get into tennis, for example, into my late 40s. Now I'm starting to play some pickleball. I've always been pretty active and love doing that. It's an opportunity to travel. Retirement, yeah, withdrawal from, but to me, it's more just the opposite. And I think for most of us, we're looking for now, what can we propel ourselves into? What are some new avenues we can take?
Right. So you agree with me, too, that it's not a destination anymore. It's really the start of a journey, a transition.
Said, yes.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that there's some three questions that you think people should ask themselves to decide, are they ready to retire or what do they want to do? Can you share what those questions are?
Yes, and they are very short and pithy, I think. So these are the three questions. Do you have enough? Have you had enough? And do you have enough to do? So they're very three simple questions. Do you have enough? Obviously is talking more about the financial aspect of retirement. And if you don't, or you're not sure, or you want to get some good guidance, I would suggest you seek a professional as you would for a doctor if you had an illness you needed help with, and see a certified financial planner or a CPA. Do you have enough? Have you had enough? When people are asked, what is it they want to do or why do they want to retire? It's the answer generally is to do other things. And I think that is important to realize. Have you had enough and what other things do you want to do? But you also have to think about what it is you're giving up. If you were working, if it gave you some status, if it gave you some intellectual engagement, if it gave you opportunities for social interaction, if it gave you purpose, if it made you feel proud of what you were doing, and of course, maybe money and some health coverage, what are you going to do to replace it? So have you had enough? Are you ready to move on? And going back to number one, are you able to do that financially? And the other thing I think is good to think about in that, have you had enough? And I'm in a community that is not age restricted, but I'd say I've lived here about 16 years. Everyone's staying, we're aging in place. The other thing is, I say, think about your elevator speech. At first, people more talked about what they had done instead of what they're doing. And because of a lot of us we've been defined by our jobs, or our jobs help define us. So how are they moving on from that sort of a thing? So I think that's, have you had enough? What are going to be these other things? And then that lastly, do you have enough to do? Do you have enough interest? Do you have enough passions? Do you have a driving purpose that you think you could maybe now realize? And what are you going to do? You'll have 168 hours a week. How are you going to fill them meaningfully? And I think that's another big one of, do you have enough to do? And I'd say most people, it's more like they wake up in the morning, they know they don't know where the day goes. Don't very often hear people say, oh, they're just bored. Some that have, they go back to work or have created another job for themselves or have gone back to their previous profession. Everybody's got a different pathway, if you ask me, and we all have to forge it for ourselves. So it's really that know thyself and what it is. Mm-hmm. Some will retire or leave their primary career and realize maybe it was a big mistake that did define them, that gave them the money, that gave them their purpose. And then by all means, people should work if they like it, by all means. Others will find different paths. Do you have enough? Have you had enough? And do you have enough to do?
I think those are very important three questions. And it does tie in to how I tend to think about it, too. It's helpful to think about what you're retiring to if you do decide that you want to retire, and what you can take with you. So that for some people, if work has been your primary identity or active parenting. I always like to I see the parallel of active parenting and when kids leave along with retirement, what's going to get you out of bed in the morning? Mm-hmm. If you want to get out of bed, there is that honeymoon phase. If you just want to stay in bed all day, but usually after a while, people say something's missing. So I really agree with you. Just in the vein, you have this wonderful section where you have some fun retirement vocabulary words. So can you share a few of those?
Yeah, sure. These are just some words I've seen in the literature and collected over time, and I think they're fun. So one is KIPERS, like KIPERS, which stands for Kids in Parents' Pockets Eroding Retirement Savings. So I think that's a funny one. Hopefully not too many of us will have KIPERS, our kids eroding our retirement savings, but that is a word I have come across that I think is a good one. Another, and I happen to like acronyms. I used them all through like anatomy and physiology to help memorize things. So I'm big on acronyms. Another one is skiers. Those are the people who have retired who are spending their kids' inheritance. If you put enough of those letters together, it will spend out a skier. So they spend their kids' inheritance. Another one that's getting a lot more press today, okay, is freemales. Freemales are women who are choosing to be single. And if you're familiar with Dr. Bella DiPaolo, she does a whole lot of research in this area. She'd actually be a terrific guest, actually, for your show. And she talks about this movement, and it seems to be growing. It's not because people are divorced. It's not because they're widowed. They are choosing to be single. And one of the words used to describe that is freemales. Wusbands is another snarky little one that's self-explanatory. A wusband, a W-U-S-B-A-N-D-S, wusband. And then two others just to throw out. One is returnment. Those are people who did leave their primary career, and then they did return to work in some capacity. A returnment. And the last, I think, is a good one, is a jobby. It's J-H-O-B-B-Y. And that would be coming up with a hobby that you could also supplement your income with. And I have two ideas for that. I have a friend in the community. Her name is Janet, and she makes this beautiful jewelry. But she's monetized it. She used to just make it and give it away to her friends. But now she does all kinds of craft shows. People say, you can't just give this to me. I'm going to purchase it from you. It's beautiful, buying it for gifts. And I have another friend, Jane, who her husband passed away, and she was very much into fitness. She also loved dogs, and she could have used a little bit more money. So she started a dog walking service, and she's able to walk those dogs for hours a day, which she loves, and then she's also helping out the dogs and the owners of the dogs. So they're just some fun words. There's some other ones, too, that are more looking ahead. For example, instead of thinking no when you're thinking about things, think about no stands for what's my next opportunity. And instead of fail, instead of thinking you're failing at something, because of course, being retired at the second part of our life or third part is such an opportunity to try new things. So think of FAIL as an acronym for your first attempt in learning. I like that one a lot. Takes the idea of failure away, your first attempt in learning. So those would be a couple examples.
Yeah, those are great. I really enjoyed that. And in your subsequent chapters, too, you just thinking about the failed one, you talk a lot about lifelong learning and resources of all the different online, free, as well as things that you can pay for, but the importance of learning lifelong. But I enjoyed those fun words. Go ahead. You were going to say something?
No, I just said thank you. I'm glad. I love them.
Good. Yeah. No, they're fun. What's the importance of the number 6,570?
Oh, okay. 6,570 is the average number of days that a person is retired. All right. It's equivalent to about 18 years. Although, as my husband pointed out, he's a CPA. Did you include a leap year when you said 18? I said, these people will get it. I'm giving round numbers, like the 18 years that you live generally after leaving your primary career. So that's the 6,570. And I'm not sure, what do you think? Does that sound like a lot of days or not really that many? And what sounds better to you or more to you, 18 years or 6,570 days?
That's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about it that way. I think I like the number of potential years ahead because it's a little less specific.
Okay. That's very true, yes.
Yeah, that I'm a little more open-ended when people, but that I just somehow it just gives more room for growth and potential. I wouldn't want people to start counting, all right, day one, day two, day three. Not that people would do it. But I know you're into numbers a little too, because I know you had said even earlier, we have 168 hours a week minus sleep. And so it's 112 hours, I think you talk about, that we have to fill each week.
Yes, I think sleep is pretty meaningful. So I include that 168 hours.
Okay.
But if we take away your sleep, and some of us, I think, get more sleep than others per night these days, right? Depending upon what you have, that's what you have to fill meaningfully, correct.
But I think it is really helpful to recognize that it's like the second middle life, if we allow ourselves to think of it that way, or the bonus years, that it really does allow for time to reinvent, to keep learning. It's really exciting to think about the amount of time ahead rather than feeling like there's less time ahead, so therefore, why bother kind of thing. And your book is very much a kind of proactive, make it as full and meaningful for yourself as you can. And as you say, there's no right way. There's so many variations on the theme.
Very true. Very true.
You get into sort of these areas about where to live, working in retirement, money, purpose, value. So let's go through some of these, if it's okay with you. You have a lot of thoughts about where to live, what and where is home, what makes a home. Can you share some of those reflections on relocation or aging in place, as you were saying before?
Yes, I'd be happy to. And this idea of relocation, they've done some interesting studies. They actually look at moving vans and they take a look at people moving from one area, moving to another. When I include all of that in the book, talking about where are people moving to and where they're moving from. But of course, there's a lot of people say that they want to age in place. AARP will say more than 70% of people say that they want to age in place. And I always wonder, what the heck does that mean? I've moved like 5 times. Does that mean what does it mean to age in place? Does it mean the last place that I've been? Does it mean to pick out another place because a transfer caused a change in where we lived? And so is that really where we're going to age in place? So in my mind, that kind of statistic of people saying they want to stay where they are, that could be very true. I don't know what the real number is. I can tell you where I live in Florida. I happen to live in Florida, and most everybody here where I am living now is from somewhere different. We did not elect to age in place, but a lot of times it's because people had been moved around, perhaps because of a career or whatever, so it wasn't the place that they chose. So when I think about what is the ideal place, first I think, and if you're not familiar with that idea of universal design, you want to make sure wherever you're going to be aging in place, until maybe it necessitates you moving out of your house because you just cannot live alone, is that you have those kind of things built in, that you have the non-slip flooring, that you have a house or an apartment or whatever you get, have an elevator. Like we happen to have a 3-story house and we put an elevator in because our bedroom is up on the 3rd floor and thought, if ever we need it, we only usually use it if we're bringing in large amounts of groceries that we have to pull up to our 2nd floor, which is our main living area. But we have a lot of grandchildren and children that come to visit, so we like to have a big enough house that can accommodate some of them. But that idea of retiring in place, we have been very happy wherever we have lived, but I think in the idea of this being able to live in whatever place it is you're living is very important with this universal design. And you can get a whole list of what are things to incorporate into your house. And this is the only house I'm living in presently that actually built and certainly took that list and looked at all of those mm-hmm. things in terms of the step-in shower and things like that. So you can remain in place as long as you want. But when I think about relocation, another acronym that I came up with is how do you find the perfect place and try to take each letter to make it mean something. And one of the P's now, I'd say, which is probably different and wouldn't have thought about it too much before, could be politics. Do you need to be concerned about the politics of the place you live? Because I think it's a little bit different right now in terms of choosing a place. And say your proximity, the proximity for the P to healthcare or grocery stores, other kinds of shopping. And then people generally are very concerned with the E for a second letter in perfect, the environment, whether we're talking about climate or quality of the air, natural disasters. We are right along the ocean. And luckily, we have these 250 feet of dunes in front of our house. And I'm going to say it was funny because when we were buying the lot, I was disappointed that there were the dunes there. I wanted the ocean right out the backyard. Guess what? Would I have made a mistake then, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be another thing. R for the real estate, the cost of living, taxes, these are all kinds of things. For F, fitness. I like to think living in an environment that invites you to be active is so important. It's surrounding you to be able to do that. And then the E in the perfect for engagement, this idea of social support that is so hugely important, or maybe employment if you want it or if it becomes necessary. And C, again, that idea back to connections, feeling like you belong in a place. And T, the transportation. Maybe you can drive now, but how about in the future? Can you get to places easily? What about airport? What about public transport? Does it have a good walk score that you can go to walkscore.com to look up? Those sorts of things. So we know no place is really perfect, and a lot of people say they want to live near their children. But I think that perfect acronym kind of gets in a lot of the things we should be thinking about living someplace.
I think that's excellent. And also in your book, just for people to know, there's aging in place checklists of different items to think about outside of the house in order to get into it as well as in the house. And there's a checklist and things to think about retiring close to family members. Is it a good idea? Is it a place you want to be if your adult children end up moving? Would you end up still wanting to be there? A lot of things that we just don't necessarily think about, you cover and also discuss with these lovely acronyms. I like them a lot.
Well, good. I hope I'm not overwhelming you with them. And I do like the idea of what our kind of approaches with grandchildren and babysitting and doing that and being close is a reverse. Like, for example, a son and his wife went to Scotland for 10 days. We flew to where they live and watched their two young children for them. So we actually have that kind of model. We are happy to come and do it. I'm just going to tell you personally, I would not want to watch my grandchildren all day long. That's just not my personality, much as I love them. But am I willing to go and be there with them for a weekend? They're all here now for a week. It's great. We go there a lot, but we're more into, I would have loved if my parents had said, hey, go away for a week. We'll watch your grandchildren. Yeah, no, we'll watch your kids. So I am into that model now, and the kids seem to love it. Two are now planning a trip to China. I'm hoping it's not quite a month long, but we shall see. Mm-hmm. That remains to be seen. Also, how many homes? I'm just happy with one. I would rather use that much into housekeeping, so I don't like that aspect. And I think that's another big one. Some people say one home or two. That's a big question for them. I can't relate to that one that much, but I know it's very important for some, and many people have more than one home. And I think that's great if you want it.
Yeah, I have an example where we have two homes. So we have city and country. We're in a real funky urban area where we actually did put a chairlift in so people could visit us. We haven't used it yet because we have 17 stairs to get into our place. And we have
a chairlift.
So people can,
I love that.
Can come up. Yeah, it's called visitability.
I love that.
Yeah. And we do know that it doesn't work as well where we live to have an elevator, but we've, even with a circular staircase, we have been told we could do a chairlift if need be. So there are things like that. And then the country home, there's the, or we're at a beach. And for me, my spirituality is so tied into nature. And so it's just, it's a wonderful combination, but it isn't right for everybody.
Okay.
But I did want to comment on you talking about being in Florida, and location ends up being important, and the having the dunes, because there have been recent articles, just given the two hurricanes that were devastating this year in Florida. And I've seen some articles saying, think carefully about where you want to retire, because do you want to start having to rebuild in your 70s, 80s, or older?
Yes.
And,
yes.
Yeah.
I saw that article as well, and that a lot of people are rethinking.
Right.
Maybe they don't, especially if you're within a distance from the ocean where it can get into your house. And I thought
right.
It was an excellent article, and it brings up a point. I think a lot of people are certainly now considering it. It'll be interesting to see these migration patterns. Are they going to change based upon the terrible devastation that has affected particularly Florida, the west coast of Florida? I'm on the east coast, so it wasn't as bad, but yeah, it's an excellent point.
Yeah. And Jackie, I'm going to integrate this question here because I think it's related to talking about home and where you live. She's from Boston and says it's often the importance of aging in community as much as aging in place that can make a place feel like a home. So I wondered if you wanted to comment on that.
I think that is very true. The idea you have to feel like you are within a community of people that you can develop relationships with. I totally agree with her. So it's not just in place in your own home, but the larger community as well has to work for you. And she makes an excellent point with that, and I couldn't agree more. And that's what I'm saying. They talk about actually trying out a place to live. You can find out so much about statistics of the people who live in a particular place on the internet, but there's really no substitute for being there. I'm going to say each time I've moved, which I have found personally, it wouldn't apply to everybody, is we've always looked for newer communities because I think it's just easier. People are looking more to make connections and make friends. It's not all established. And I can only speak for myself and say for the other people who live here, we've all thought that was a good model, somewhat newer, or maybe if you're looking in a bigger master plan community, a newer section that people ended up feeling it was easier. I also think things like plan communities that perhaps have some sort of a club component to it can make it easier to meet people, whether you're an ambivert in between extroverted and introverted. So I can put myself out there if I need to, but I also like it being passive. For example, playing tennis, you join a team, or you're going to practice, you're going to show up, you're going to be able to make people. It's a passive way to do it. I think it's good to look at yourself, too, in terms of where are you on the extrovert-introvert sort of line and see how that could work into choosing a place to relocate as well.
Good point. Good point. So what about the working in retirement? I know you have 5 P's that pull together some of your ideas about that. Can you comment on that?
Oh, yeah. Because working in retirement, I'm thinking if you're trying to figure out what to do, and there are a lot of suggestions out there. AARP has a great list of companies online that you can find that want to hire mature people, which I think is good. So that's a nice one. And there are lots of things that I think also is good. I was reading, you might have seen this article recently, companies that provide, say, tuition assistance if you want wanted to go back and get another degree that they will give you perhaps 10 over a period of time for you to pursue another degree. I think that is an interesting thing. So I like that idea as far as the resources to find out who does want, say, an older worker, someone who's 50 or 60. And of course, the job market is pretty good right now. So that one is pretty good for us as far as that is concerned. But yeah, I'm thinking that the job working and some people that want to create their own sort of a job, their own sort of a thing. I feel like I've just created my own little business after writing books of being able to talk and things like that to be able to do that.
Great. I'm just looking. There aren't any other questions about that there. But so let's shift to the money and your brain. I know a lot of your background has been in behavioral economics, and you've got a few chapters actually in the book about finances, about taxes, about money and your brain. And how does that all work from your perspective?
I think there's just some easy things to keep in mind when we think about how our mind can very much influence how we do things, how we buy things, if we're going to purchase, if we're not going to purchase things. And for example, there's many different terms to describe a lot of these behavioral economic terms that are fun to know about and to take a look at. And so one, as an example, would be something called an anchoring, that we see something, say, in a store, like a pair of jeans may be listed at $70, but guess what? They're on sale and they're only $50. So that immediately creates an anchor in our mind. Hey, we're getting something for a lot less. And it's just people over time, it's just shown that we fall victim to that sort of thing, that, oh, it's not $70, it's really $50. But of course, we don't really know the value of the jeans, but that anchor that gets created will affect us and affect our buying things. So there's a lot of things like that. If we're aware of the terms or aware of what it is. Another one is, I call it analysis paralysis, when you have to make a choice among things. For example, I think moving for a lot of people, when the people say they're just going to stay in place, sometimes I think it's analysis paralysis, because it's easier oftentimes to do nothing than it is to do something. So when you think about, am I going to look at the tax implications of moving? Am I going to look at, can I build a house or can I find a house that has the things I want? You're pretty happy where you are. Sometimes the analysis paralysis just gets to us and we just say, you know what, I'm just going to stay where I am. That analyzing so many choices, and that also feeds into something called status quo bias, that it's just easier to do nothing than it is to do something. And whether it involves our health or purchasing a home or purchasing products, it's a big one. And just recognizing that maybe we're just doing it because of this difficulty in making a decision and doing something else. It gives us the ability to move forward. Another example might be framing. If you saw some, I'll say like buying beef, if you buy beef in a store like hamburger meat, and it says it's 80%, it says it's 20% lean, that might jump out at us instead of the 80% not lean, which isn't so good. That idea of framing, how we look at that, if we see it's 20% fat versus 80% lean, would be an example of framing. How do we look at things and really understand what the underlying reality of it all? It would be like if someone said, if you're going to do something, you have a 50% chance of success. Or if someone said, if you do that, you have a 50% chance of failure. It sounds very different to us, I think. And that's this idea of framing that we have to be aware of. What do the words really mean? Do they really mean the same thing, but we interpret them very differently? And I think we often do. And then there's another bias called overconfidence bias, that we tend to overinflate our own view of things. Sometimes, like when it comes to selling our house, we might have this overconfidence bias that it's worth more than somebody else is willing to pay for it, so we're not going to sell it. But really, it's only worth what somebody is willing to pay for it in the end. So there are a lot of these fun, interesting things, I think, that can make us better consumers and make us better decision makers.
I think that's true. I think with the housing market, I think it's been interesting to watch over the last couple of decades because houses actually got so inflated and then are, it seems like, coming down now, and maybe with the interest rate changes too. And I think it's been a harsh awakening for people, particularly older people who were maybe putting off selling and then decided they wanted to sell now, and now is not a good time to sell. But then again, just as you're saying, how does one become realistic of sensing what or assessing what your house is worth if it was overinflated and now it's dropped so much and it may still be overinflated, but not where you want it to be?
Very true. Yep.
So hard kind of decision making in relation to that. What other factors in terms of money? What I like about your book is when your approach is very holistic, and I think too often in the past, people have just focused on finances, but I think it is, I always say it's part of the puzzle. I think finances and health and wellness are two big parts of our lives that really impact other parts of our life, lifestyle choices that we can have. Other things about money that might be helpful for the listeners to think about from how you approach it?
I'd say from a personal viewpoint, I'd say I generally live below my means because I grew up that way in a very modest household. I'm more into finding the joy of things that really don't cost money, like taking a bike ride, talking with friends. We don't have to go to an expensive restaurant to have a good time, enjoying nature, finding a place that has a lot of parks. You don't have to spend money to do it, to get exercise. There's so many things that I think are available in a community. I'm on the board of trustees of our library in the county that I live in, and I didn't realize what an incredible gem they are. I can't even tell you, well, we have an incredible librarian, a head librarian, all kinds of lectures, talks, the books that you can get that we used to have to pay for, how you can just download them, activities if you have grandchildren that are free. I'm going to say free. We support our libraries with our taxes. I think they are a marvelous thing. So I think there are a lot of ways that we can use some of the things that are out there that are, put in quotations, free, that can bring so many things to us. And just for example, the books. And if they don't have it, you ask them to please buy it, and generally they will for you. And it's just a marvelous thing, I find, that all the community kind of activities that can be free. We have these, we're big into the turtles and laying eggs, and they have a turtle hospital, and you can help support them, and they will come out and you can watch them dig up the turtle eggs. From that to different lectures on cutting edge researchers coming down, of course my background science, so I like that. They're reporting on their newest discoveries, all free, all open to the public. For a money saving thing for activities, I think there's a lot more out there if you do a little digging around that your own community would offer. You probably have some suggestions yourself for that. But I'm in a small county, but it's just amazing to me how many things in so many different areas that you can enjoy. Free days at different kinds of museums and things like that, that really can be tremendously life savers in terms of money.
No, absolutely. I do agree. And it takes sometimes a little work to check it out, but I think it's worth it. And one of the benefits, I know there's the jury's not out about how to feel about it, but there are what are called senior discounts and benefits of being older and being able to, if it feels like it, it can help. Absolutely. And I think libraries, I agree with you. I think libraries are such a great resource. And one of the things that I think has saved many people during the pandemic has been some of the free courses. There's so much online learning opportunities that we have, which does lead to, I just wanted to comment on that, but also the impact, what thoughts you have on the impact of COVID on some of these issues that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a good point. I know I love to travel, so obviously it impacted that. So maybe in a different kind of way, it ended up being a money-saving thing because it wasn't going anywhere that often. But I guess I'm not sure exactly what you mean. Obviously, people who were concerned about it, who stayed in, I found that I had to entertain myself more and look at some of these other things, like you're talking about online courses, reading books, doing things that didn't involve actively spending money to do them. But yeah, that has certainly been a game changer in terms of COVID, and it was certainly life-changing, literally, for some people, and for others, it maybe made them look inward a little more. I think some people had suffered if they're very extroverted and needed other people around, and that wasn't happening so much as well.
No, I think all of that, and I think it's made an impact of people evaluating where work, the role work plays in their life too, which indirectly is money, but also just what's important in life and who's important to me in life. I think all of that have been things that have potentially changed. And thinking about sometimes people deciding to start their own businesses from just as a way to earn some extra money. I've seen a lot of that happen. I wanted to shift a little that Mafa from New York City, who did comment earlier on, bring her comment in about another measure of time is how many weeks are left. And she said that's fewer than 1,000. She said that earlier. But she also was asking, any quick hints for the single women retiring alone?
Yes, I would say if you're single and you're retiring alone, that this idea of community is going to be so very extremely important to you, particularly. So if you don't have a spouse for some sort of built-in social support, to look and see what are good places. And they are actually, they're places that are listed. In fact, I think I have a link in the book for them that to find out where are good places that are ranked good for singles. There are also intentional communities that have been created. There's one person I had interviewed in the book, and she loved the idea of a commune type of a thing, and indeed picked up and moved to one. I think it's in California, where they have, it's all singles, where they have a common house where they will cook the meals and things like that. But then they each have their own individual little home surrounding it, and they all contribute to the community. So there are a lot of, the person wants to look up intentional communities, you'll find lots of ones that are created. And she was, they call them elder orphan. She was single. She did not have children. She was not divorced. She had chosen to be single, and she knew that community was so important. So she picked up, I believe it might have been called Wolf Lodge, and moved to a community that was primarily singles and is absolutely loving it. So that is a factor to be able to look for. Where are you going to find that social support? Because, of course, it is so vitally important.
Great. Thank you. What about retiree regrets? What do you have to say about that? Because I know you have a chapter on that, too. Of what, can you share some of that with the listeners?
Yeah, I think there's some regrets, and I compiled three different sources. A woman named Bronnie Ware, she cared for people dying in the last years of their lives, and she compiled some of their thoughts. And there was another guy named Joel Brown, and he interviewed a lot of elderly residents. And it's another source too, which is, I think, Quora, which is that online thing. That's what it was. And people just put down what their regrets were. And I compiled them all into a list, and I think it's very meaningful. One is, these are people then that, and people might have read Tuesdays with Maury, which kind of is one person's perspective about that, about what's important and looking back. And I believe he had ALS, and looking back to say what's most important. But when I compiled all these sources from it, this is what people had said were the main things. I wish I had realized that happiness is a choice, my choice. I wish I realized that time passes much more quickly than we realize. I should have done more of what I wanted to do rather than what others expected me to do. I should have said, I love you more often. I wish I had spent more time with family and friends. People are far more important than work or things. I should have resolved my conflicts with others. I wish I had been more compassionate and helped others who were less fortunate. And I wish I had the courage to express my feelings rather than hold in bitterness and resentment. I just think those are so powerful, and how we can learn from others, because we always think there's time. And I don't know, that those really just really quite hit me and made me rethink how I often act. I often think, I'm still in pretty good shape, I got a lot of time, but it really brings to the point what really is important to us and how should we be acting now.
I totally agree, so that you don't end up having to have all those regrets at the end. And they really tie into really thinking about your values, what you believe in, purpose, how you want to connect with people. They're all so important, right? Pulling it together, what would you say are some of the secrets for a successful retirement?
I think if we put it all together and we were looking at it, we'd have to say having strong social support is vital.
Okay.
We know no person is an island, so we need that strong social support. I like what Eleanor Roosevelt said, have something to wake up for every day. We need to have something to wake up for every day. And we should also, another thing she had said was, do something that scares you every day. I think that is a great one. Get out of our comfort area a little bit. Having a willingness to discuss and adapt. As we get older, we're going to have to make some adaptations. If you have a significant other, we're going to have to discuss and adapt to things. This idea of having a healthy body, mind, and spirit is an important one also to work on. We've all heard, for example, loneliness is equivalent to smoking 18 cigarettes a day. And this idea of social support, people live longer if they have strong social support. Have a vision of your future self. How are you going to deal with it when you're not able to traverse those steps or whatever? How are you going to handle that? Have a solid financial plan. You can't get away from the money thing. And my last one would be, know what the insights are from others. So I think this thing that we just talked about with regrets, they are important to know as well.
Absolutely. No, I think that's all really important. The other thing, I'd like you to be able to tell people how to get in touch with you and your website and all.
Okay. First, I'd like to thank you for having me, and thank you for all those who are listening in. It's just my name, JanCullinane.com. And then I do Twitter. I am @JanCullinane, and I also on LinkedIn. You could follow me, and I post things on that as well. So those would be the prime ways to do it.
Great. And do you have a blog?
No, I don't really create blogs. What I will do is tend to post other things I find interesting. I do write for a magazine, but then I usually send those out by Twitter and I would post those.
And so the book, for those of you who are interested, is called, again to reiterate, The New Retirement, The Ultimate Guide to the Rest of Your Life. And I assume it's on Amazon and...
It is, and really
and whatever, Barnes and Noble and wherever books are sold.
I guess Amazon is the behemoth out there.
Great. So any last kind of comment?
Last thought. Let me just read this thing from Michael Jordan I came across that I think is just inspirational. Okay. I just did a talk the other day at a health group for women, and I read this, and I don't know. I just really love this. Okay. This is from basketball great Michael Jordan. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed. I love that.
I do too. That's a good takeaway. Yeah.
I think it really is. Yeah, because we only think of Michael Jordan as, oh my gosh, Michael Jordan, the Michael Jordan. But yet look at that. Yeah.
And I think for all of us to take that in, that it's perhaps the mistakes, the failures, or whatever we perceive as that helps propel us forward and helps us be able to be maybe more intentional and conscious, but also humble as we go along.
Absolutely. And knowing that even if we fail, it's not permanent, doesn't have to be permanent. We can persevere. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for being our guest today and sharing your words of wisdom. And as I said, I think your book is a tour de force, you know, that it covers so many things, and the resources are really quite up to date, and it's really quite an accomplishment. So you should be very proud of yourself for the way that you've updated this third edition of your book. Thank you.
You should be proud of yourself for offering this wonderful opportunity for people to listen, to learn, to partake, to discuss. It's a phenomenal thing, and thank you.
Hello. Thank you, too. Thank you, everybody, for being here, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio with Dr. Dorian Mintzer. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show, listen to past episodes, or download our free retirement transition guide, visit revolutionizeyourretirementradio.com.